The front of the room was set up like a miniature parliament. The two sides faced each other from opposing benches, separated by the length of two swords. A young man named Fairchild, with sandy hair and fine features, was addressing the audience from the dispatch box.
"The motion before you tonight is, this House believes that slavery should be abolished from the face of the earth. And indeed, the case is so self-evident, I feel I hardly need to argue it. To keep innocent men and women in chains, to tear them from their homes and work them to death, this is a crime against God and all the laws of justice."
The chamber erupted with applause. Abolitionist sentiment ran high amongst the Cambridge undergraduates. On the facing bench, most of the opposition speakers listened to his oration glumly. Only one seemed untroubled. He lounged back nonchalantly, his mouth set in a lazy smile, as if he alone was privy to some enormous joke.
"To close for the opposition, the chair calls on Mr. Mungo St. John."
The man who'd been lounging on the front bench rose. No one applauded, but a new force seemed to charge the room. "Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard a great deal this evening about the supposed evils of slavery. But has anyone here ever been to the great tobacco plantations of Virginia, or the cotton fields of the Mississippi?" His smoky yellow eyes surveyed the room. "That is my native soil. I was born and raised in Virginia. Slavery to me is not sensational reports in the newspapers or hell-raising sermons. I have seen the reality of it." He lowered his voice. "Is the work hard?" "Yes." "Do rich men profit from the labor of others?" "Again, yes." "But do not be gulled by these fantasies of brutality and violence you are peddled. My father keeps 400 workers, and he cares for each one. When they work well, he praises them. When they are sick, he tends to them. And when they die, he grieves for them."
"Well, that is because each one is worth $1,000 to him," said Fairchild.
The audience laughed.
"My friend is quite right," said Mungo. "But think of something you own that is worth that much. A fine horse, say, or a necklace. Do you beat it and disdain it and leave it in the mud? Or do you take superlative care of it, polish it, and watch out for it, because it is so valuable to you?"
He leaned on the dispatch box, as comfortable as if he were leaning on the mantelpiece in his drawing room, enjoying a cigar.
"I am a guest in your country, but sometimes it takes a stranger's eye to observe what the natives do not see. Go to Manchester, Birmingham, or any of your other great manufacturing cities. Visit the factories. You will see men, women, and children laboring there 12, 14, or even 18 hours a day in conditions that would make my father sick to his stomach."
"At least they are free and paid," said Fairchild.
"And what use is that freedom if it is only the freedom to live in a slum until you are worked to death? What use is a wage if it does not buy you enough to eat? The only thing that money buys is ease for the conscience of the mill owners."
On the opposition bench, Fairchild had risen.
"A point of order."
Mungo gave a languid wave to allow it.
"Even if we accept this preposterous picture of African slaves holidaying in some benevolent paradise, this gentleman is rather coy about how those persons came to be in his country. Will he admit that the slave trade is nothing but a trade in human suffering? Or will he try to convince us that millions of Africans took a pleasure cruise to America to enjoy the benefits of the climate?"